It's a pleasure to be here once again after a long time. Speak a little bit on Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll be having also other programs. But of course, Srimad Bhagavatam is our main scripture. It is the basis of everything that we do. So this little gathering in the morning, which looks kind of casual, a handful of people who are here, and it's one of the programs going on in the temple, is actually one of the main activities that we are performing, because Srimad Bhagavatam is the very basis of everything that we do. So it's quite a significant time.
I can't see, is it 11, 18, 13?
Yes.
Okay.
The 11th canto. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, from the 11th canto, chapter 18, description of Varnashram Dharma, text 13. Istva yato padeshanam, dattva sarvasvam ritvije, agnim svaprana avesya, nirapeksha parivraje. Istva yato padeshanam, dattva sarvasvam ritvije, agnim svaprana avesya, nirapeksha parivraje. Istva, having worshipped, yata, according to upadesham, scriptural injunctions, mam, me, dattva, having given, sarvasvam, all one possesses, ritvije, to the priest, agnin, the sacrificial fire, svaprani, within oneself, avesha, placing, nirapeksha, without attachment, parivrajet, one should take sannyas and set off. Translation. Having worshipped me according to scriptural injunctions, and having given all one's property to the sacrificial priest, one should place the fire sacrifice within oneself. Thus, with the mind completely detached, one should enter the sannyas order of life. Purport. One cannot maintain the sannyas order of life unless one gives up all materialistic association, engages exclusively in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Any material desire will gradually prove to be a stumbling block in the prosecution of renounced life. Therefore, a liberated sannyasi must vigilantly keep himself free from the weeds of material desire, which surface principally in the form of attachments to women, money, and reputation. One may possess a beautiful garden filled with fruits and flowers, but without vigilant maintenance, the garden will be overrun by weeds. Similarly, one who achieves a beautiful state of Krishna consciousness takes the sannyas order of life. But if he does not vigilantly and painstakingly keep his heart clean, there is always the danger of a relapse into illusion. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Yanandana Salakya Chakshuram Nimittam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mahavistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Pakadamiyam Dadati Swaparantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Translation again. Having worshipped me according to scriptural injunctions, and having given all one's property to the sacrificial priest, one should place the fire sacrifice within oneself. Thus, with the mind completely detached, one should enter the sannyas order of life. Our stay in the material world is temporary, and that is the first consideration. So, why place all our energy into making arrangements for a temporary situation? Rather, an intelligent man should invest a low level of energy into his temporary situation and invest more energy into an eternal situation. And that is the first principle. So one must reserve energy for the eternal situation all throughout life. And Vedic culture is based on this principle. Therefore, in youth, there is discipline. In youth, there is brahmacharya. In youth, there is training to realize that we are not this body, but that we are eternal spirit soul. And therefore, in youth, celibacy is recommended. Because, after all, it is sexual activity that particularly binds us to the bodily concept of life. It is sexual activity that binds one to trying to enjoy the material body, and the material body becomes the priority. Therefore, celibacy is advantageous, and especially in youth, when the facilities for sex life are very much available, especially at that time, celibacy is very important. Because at that time, one needs to fix himself on investing in the eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, rather than preoccupying himself with the temporary domain. So, of course, this approach is totally alien to modern culture. Modern culture is just carpe diem, live by the day. Enjoy the pleasures of the day, carpe diem. That is our current culture. Live by the moment. Enjoy while you still can. Is the mother facility. Now that you can, make sure you get the maximum enjoyment, because later you will not have the facility anymore. So don't waste your time. Just do it. Enjoy now. That is basically modern culture. Because modern culture has no concept of eternity. When there is no concept of eternity, then that changes everything. And this is the big change between our modern day culture and traditional cultures. That all traditional cultures of the world have some sort of concept of eternity, of eternal existence. Some concept of the soul existing separate from the body, and the soul existing eternally, and the body being a temporary vehicle in which now we are moving about. Yantra rudani maya. So a yantra, a machine, a vehicle, that is what the material body is. So the sannyasi is well prepared. A sannyasi is one who is deeply situated in transcendental knowledge, not only intellectually, but he has also practiced it. And not only is he intellectually convinced that he is an eternal spirit soul, that intellectual knowledge is not sufficient. He is also aware that by nature we are an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, that we are eternally in the submissive position to the Supreme Lord, that we are eternally dependent upon the Supreme Lord, and that also in the liberated stage this relationship continues. That is the next principle. There are two classes of men that take sannyas. The first class are the jnanis who take sannyas. They are only accepting that yes, we are eternal, but they don't see themselves as an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. They only see yes, we are eternal. That type of sannyas is very difficult. It is very harsh, because that type of sannyas is based on only renunciation. But Vaishnava sannyas is based on the principle of being the eternal servant. Yes, also that the temporary is very secondary, and that one, as a sannyasi, one would do best to minimize his temporary needs as much as possible. That is the ideal. Simplify, simplify, and simplify again. And if we can do so, if we can simplify our material needs, that is gain. But only to utilize our energy and the facility, that the time that has been gained in the service of the Lord. Our primary objective is the service of the Lord. That is the main thing. That is the main thing. Etam sasdai paratmanistam adyasitam purvatamir mahabhi aham tarishyami granta param tamo mukundangi nisevyeva. That if we are serving the Supreme Lord, then automatically we can cross over this ocean of nescience called material existence, because we are fully satisfied in the relationship with the Supreme Lord. Then who cares about the material world, which is otherwise full of temptations? It is explained that rivers are flowing into the ocean. When I received sannyas, then that was in 97, and I was in the Bhaktivedanta Manor, and there was a television crew who had filmed the whole thing, and they were they wanted to interview me at the end, and they were asking a question from, well, does it feel any different? And I remember that interview very well, somehow or another. And I said, yes, of course it feels different. Just like, does it feel any different when one gets married? A man had a relationship with a certain lady, but then he gets married, and you ask him 5 minutes after the marriage, so do you feel any different now? And anybody married here? Anybody married? Okay. So anybody just got married? Or recently? Nobody. Anybody planning to get married? Yeah, good. Nice. Thank you so much for your participation. Well, it's often in the material world, you know, oftentimes on the last day before marriage, you have a big party, right? You throw a big party, all your friends come, and you just like, for once, you know, one, the last time, you know, the last time, you know what I mean? and then it's all over. Yes, then it's marriage, and then you have the ring around your finger, right? The ring's there, and then you know it, you know. Something has changed. Oh, yes, it has. You got a ring on your finger, yes. And that ring is there to remind you that now you have a duty, and if you forget it, your wife will remind you. That's how it is. That's the difference between marriage and just having a relationship like that. Yes?
Would you classify marriage as bondage?
As what?
As bondage.
Bondage. Yes. Yes. Definitely. Yes, marriage is a form of bondage. It's voluntary bondage, and it may be bondage out of love and affection, but it undoubtedly is binding us in many ways. First, in Vedic culture, it is very interesting that in marriage, traditionally, rings were not exchanged. But what they did is they took the cloth of the male and the female, and they tie the cloth together in a knot, right? To symbolize the bondage, the bond that is taking place there. Yeah. And even, I think in English there is still some saying, we're tying the knot. I don't know where that comes from. I have no idea where the English, how are they tying a knot? Maybe they learned it in India. Yeah? I mean, it's kind of puzzles me a little, but tying the knot, I guess they got it from their colonial days in India, because they couldn't see where else they could have gotten it from, because it's in Vedic culture that we tie the knot. And yes, the knot is not only tied in the cloth, the knot is actually tied in the heart. And it is described in Vedic literature as Hridaya Granthi, the knot in the heart. And then what do you get? Aho, Griha, a house. Then you need a house. Then some land. Modern times, a balcony, you know, into your apartment, right? And then, you know, Kriya, Kshetra, Sutta, Apta, Rita, so many things will come. Children will come. Then, you know, social position comes. Money is needed. I mean, if you're well prepared for marriage, then you have some savings. That would be wise. One who gets married, you know, in the old days, it would be that you know, the young man who wanted to get married had to ask for the hand of the girl to the father, right? And the father would ask all these questions. So, who's your father? Yes, and oh, well, what are you doing? And you know, because then the father could calculate how much, well, who's your father? And then, you know, can sort of guess how much money they've got in the bank. And next thing is, okay, what do you do? Right? And see, like, well, does it look like this young man is going somewhere so that he can maintain my daughter? Otherwise, get out of here. Yeah. Right? Because those days have gone, right? Long gone. Marriage also is on a decline, and more just live together. And at first they would live together and get married when the kids were coming, but nowadays even that, you know, nobody cares about that either. And there's a large percentage actually of people who just stay together and have kids, and like the rabbits do, and without any formal ceremony or whatsoever. But that's not advantageous. A formal ceremony had a function. Why so much pomp in marriages? In India, sometimes 7 days, a man on a horse, and so many things they're doing, my God, turbans, and I mean, is something else. And then, I've also gone through a Vedic marriage, but not with the horse, you know. But there was a particular point, I remember, where in the ceremony, the lady, my, at that point, well, almost wife, walked around me 7 times. I didn't know what it meant, but I felt something like being bewitched right there. And, you know, I had this urge in me to run. Something told me, run, run, run. Anyway, I didn't do that. Only so many years later I took sannyas. What is this sannyas? Sannyas is the renounced order of life, where after marriage one actually just gives up marriage voluntarily and leaves home. Sannyas means to become socially dead, as good as dead, right? Phew. One dies and is still alive. That's a great thing. I can tell you, it's fantastic. I can recommend it, you know. Live for many years and then die, but stay alive. But like basically start with a clean slate. Everything forgotten, everything finished. It's all left behind. Your job, your family, all the contracts, everything. Goodbye. Freedom. Yes. It is very nice, of course.
The level of sannyas, I just checked my...
go ahead.
The library to check the meaning of sannyas, like, which means it's a higher level of attainment or something.
Well, it is an...
Sannyas
is a social position, which is a facility, which helps us, which frees us to focus on spiritual life. That's the idea. See, in the Vedic culture, they say Anta Narayana Smriti, that at the time of death, at the end, you have to remember the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, your life is considered useless. Yeah, said you've wasted your life. If your life was only about feeding the kids, then you're no better than the birds. Yeah? They're better at it than we are at feeding their kids. Yeah? They're full time on it, you know, and they're feeding them. Right? So if feeding your kids is all you do, then it's not, you're no better than a bird. So life is meant to grow spiritually. Besides the material needs, and then in the end to just leave the material side behind and focus completely on the Supreme Lord. But if you're happily together at home, and if you just again and again look into those starry eyes of your beautiful wife, then your heart melts. And even when you're 93 and she's only 87 and still a spring chicken, and you know, and when you're about to croak it, and then, you know, and you're still sitting hand in hand, bone in bone and skin in skin, right? And just at that time, right? At that time, as you're about to leave this world, you're looking into her eyes for the last time and saying, oh, darling, I don't know how I'm going to live without you. And those were your last words, which are marked on the tombstone, right? Then, what will be your destination? If we live on, what will be the destination? Yes, then... When one leaves, it is said in Vedic literature, yam yam vapis manam bhavam charati antakadevaram, whatever consciousness you have at the time of death, that will determine your next destination. So if the consciousness is very much absorbed in the material situation, then you get again another material situation. That is the idea about reincarnation. Reincarnation means when we are so absorbed in matter, all right, then the subtle body will carry us again into another body in this world. And again, it starts all over. And again, you have to be a helpless kid and cry, and your mother doesn't understand anything. And again, you have to go to school and you don't understand anything. And like that, the whole ordeal, if you know what I'm talking about. Again. And always being too small. God, isn't it disturbing when you're too small? It is. It is. You're never big enough. God, what a drag. Yeah? You can't wait till you're finally big enough. Yeah? And then you're big enough, and then you're thinking, if only I wish I was a child again. That's the funny situation. So, you know, the whole material ordeal once again. So reincarnation is not some sort of adventure journey of the spirit. That's not reincarnation. Reincarnation is something that is forced upon us because of our attachment. So therefore, it is advantageous to become detached from material entanglement and material life. So this has to be practiced. So this, one can see that in all the traditional cultures of the world, it doesn't matter where you go. Anywhere in the world, one sees that a particular class of men who go deep into spiritual life simultaneously minimize their material involvement. And we see great sages who have sort of left the world and withdrawn themselves from the world, and they became very deep in their spiritual pursuits. Because spirit and matter don't go well together. They don't mix very well. That is the problem. So it tends to become one or the other, as we notice. Therefore, the sannyas position is the position to renounce the world, to renounce family, if one has, to renounce worldly responsibility, and to say, now I will not live a double life. Here in the morning we see all kinds of devotees of Krishna who slip in the temple with a tie and a suit. That means they live a double life. That means, you know, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. It means that part of the time they have to play the game.
Put the tie around the neck.
Yes, balls. Nice balls. So partially they have to play the game. Because you want the money. And when you want the money, you have to play the game. But sannyas means no. No more games for money. No more theatrical performance. Yes, boss, very funny, boss. I like this, the boss and his jokes, you know. Really good, aren't they? Very smart. No. Sannyas means no compromise. Because sannyas means everything for the Supreme Lord and having full faith that He will maintain me somehow or other. And of course also, His devotees, somehow or other. Sannyas means no adjustment. So everything can be said. At work, there are certain things that cannot be said. That's just the way it is in the world. But sannyas means completely free to speak the truth at any time. So that is the right of sannyas. Right? No one can tell a sannyasi, oh, can you please speak about this? No. No. You have no right. Oh, well, Maharaj, I mean, the program is a particular program in this and this context, and therefore, could you adjust the presentation? No? 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 Nothing but the truth? Nothing but the truth? That is sannyas. So it's lots of fun, actually. Because otherwise, only kids have the right to speak the truth anywhere and everywhere. But only small kids. When you're already, like, growing up, then it's already, you know. How can you say that? You know what I mean? But when you're small, you can say anything, you know. Mommy, what a big nose! So everyone embarrassed, but kids speak the truth. Yeah? So sannyasis can also do that, you know. And Prabhupada regularly did. Prabhupada is our spiritual master whose statue is there on the raised throne. Who was a teacher for the world. And Prabhupada also showed that, that he could not be restricted, that he was not going to flatter or flatter the audience. No, he was ready to say anything. Sometimes, yes, he would say, we'd be very social and how nice and this, that. And other times he would just say the thing that everyone hoped he would not say. They brought this professor from Indian origin in America who was a professor specialized in Hinduism, and they brought him and they introduced him to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, pleased to meet you, could you please give a definition of Hinduism? And the professor said, well, that is hard to say. And Prabhupada says, what is that? He said, you are a professor in Hinduism, yeah? And you cannot give a definition of Hinduism? He says, here is my disciple, Sarup Damodar, he is also a PhD. Yeah? Sarup Damodar, what do you call that? Cheating, Srila Prabhupada. That's right, cheating, right? Said, how can you be a professor in Hinduism and you cannot give a definition of Hinduism? Simply cheating. Well, within 5 minutes, they had a major fight. A major fight. Right? Maybe 3 minutes. Right? That was the situation. And in fact, it got so bad, this professor was also getting really into it. It got so bad that Brahmananda, who had quite a big build, you know, tall and broad and kind of heavy, walked up to the professor and said, I think it's better you leave. And the professor got the point and left. You know, so, I mean, what a way to treat a professor. He comes in, you call him a cheater, and at the end, you bring some heavy bouncer, and he sort of shows him the door. Yeah? I mean, if you want to offend someone, just do that. Yeah? So, 20 years later, Ravindra Sarup, who has an academic degree, met this professor. Yeah? He met this professor, and the professor said, "Oh, remember that time when I met Swami Bhaktivedanta?" cringing. And then Ravindra tried to say, the professor said, yes, I remember it like the day of yesterday. This is really, really terrible. And then finally the professor said, well, I have to admit, he was right. So that's a sannyasi. A sannyasi is supposed to speak the truth. And because of this, because he's dedicated to purity himself and living the truth himself, therefore when he speaks the truth, it penetrates deep into the hearts. And ultimately Yeah, people know it deep down that this is the truth. That is the sannyasi. So a sannyasi is specifically one who preaches, one who preaches the message. He's not just concerned with renouncing the world and freeing himself from all kinds of entanglement and so on, so that at the time of death he will be free. He's not only thinking hand in hand, skin in skin, bone in bone, and skeleton in skeleton, and you know, how I love your skeleton. He is not just thinking like that. That's not it, that he wants to free himself in old age from entanglement. The real thing is that he wants to go deep. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was about to take sannyas, he couldn't hide it from his mother. She picked up on it. She could see his mood. She could see now he's getting in the mood to renounce. And one day she confronted him. You are not going to take sannyas. Don't lie to me. Tell me the truth. And then he had to admit it. So then there was a few days discussion. And she came with all kinds of arguments. And he had a hard time arguing back. But anyway, it went on for days. Then finally he came up with the last argument. And the last argument, he said, Mother, isn't it true that sooner or later a son has to leave home? Isn't it that a son has to leave home and go into the world and make a fortune? And then he will bring it back to his parents in their old age. So really, the son goes into the world, makes his fortune, and then brings it back to his parents. Isn't that how it is? It used to be like that. Not nowadays, of course. Now he makes a fortune and he gives nothing to his parents. But in the old days, he used to make give to his parents. And so, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, in this way, I must leave home and I must get the fortune of love of God and bring that back to my parents, to my mother. So that is the inner reason for taking sannyas. To be free. To go deep into the relationship with the Supreme Lord. To forget everything else. No more investment of energy into anything else. Only the service of the Supreme Lord. Nothing else. That's it. That is sannyas. That's what it's meant for. That's why sannyas is so good. That's why it's the best there is. And I remember my conversation at that sannyas initiation. And I remember when the movie camera was on me and they asked me, so is it better? Is it better now to have taken sannyas? And I said, yes, definitely. Definitely it's better. I said, take it like this, you know. I said, everyone in the world is thinking that they're doing pretty good. And you know, take for example the President of the United States of America. I mean, can you imagine what it's like to be the President of the United States of America and to actually think, you know, that I am the most important man in the entire world. I am number one. I'm number one. That's what it means to be the President of the United States of America. So that's quite something. Huh? Even the telephone code of America, 1. Australia is only 61. Yeah. So 1 in India, 91. Anyway. But America, number one. Yeah. So, you know, the top dog, you know, the President of the United States, most important man in the entire world. But the Brahmanas in India, in many temples, they're thinking, oh, this President of the United States is a malecha. He is an outcast. He is a meat eater. He is a fallen soul. We wouldn't even let him in the temple. Yeah. No? He can't come in? No way. No. If the President of the United States goes to Jagannath Puri and he wants to enter the temple, you know, they can fly him with a helicopter to the gate, but they won't let him in. No way. Right. Fallen. Yeah. So the Brahmanas think that they are by far superior to that President of the United States. In this way, everyone thinks that he's got the best position. But I said at that interview at the TV, I said, but the truth of the matter is that actually now I've got it. Now I've got the best position. Because sannyas is actually the best position you can get in this material world. There, everyone positions himself somewhere. Oh yes, everyone's trying to find a niche. But the best niche that you can find in this world is sannyas. Then, well, at the end of the day, all it is a niche. A niche. A little corner. It's just your corner where you're comfortable. It's only a niche. And you've got to use that niche. All the sannyas, the danda in the ropes and super saffron, it all won't do you any good. Right? Although saffron is a nice color because the dust of Krishna's lotus feet is saffron. And that's why we wear saffron. Can't beat that. If you want to know why we wear saffron. Right? But, you know, so, you know, you can have blue and red and flowers, etc., but saffron beats it all, ultimately. And white is misery. Every stain you'll see. When you wear white cloth, you need a wife. So we in the renounced order, we wear saffron. Yeah. Very nice. But all these things, that's all part of the niche, all part of the external position that we take. So ultimately sannyas is only an external position from where it's a diving board. It's a diving board. And it may be a bit higher than an ordinary diving board, and that's why we can do a few better somersaults, right, than just from the, you know, the low-level diving board of the Grihastha Ashram, where you just basically boom, 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 one, two, three, boom. That's about the best you can manage, right? Because you carry all that extra weight around, right, as a Grihastha. But as a sannyasi, we can do all kinds of elegant somersaults, diving from the tower, and fly around. Literally, we do lots of flying. But the bottom line is that all that is also secondary. Because the real thing is, how much are we absorbed in service to the Supreme Lord? So if one takes a position of sannyas, which is the position of being the spiritual teacher of all classes of men, and one walks around with his nose up in the air, then there is no benefit whatsoever. Then that sannyas is simply a burden. Then that sannyas is simply an anarta, something that blocks us on the spiritual path. But if sannyas is taken in humility, and if one realizes that actually I'm totally dependent on the Supreme Lord, and He, in His kindness, has given me unlimited facility. When I was forgetful and totally engrossed in material life, then He sent me messengers. Then He made arrangements to remind me that there is a spiritual goal. And thus, I am totally indebted to the Supreme Lord. And there is nothing I can do to repay Him although I should try. And thus, with all, thus a sannyasi is trying to use all his energy in the service of the Supreme Lord to repay the debt that he has to the Supreme Lord. And in that way, one can utilize the sannyas ashram, or the position of sannyas, for spiritual advancement. And if one's lucky, and one gets, then one may please the Lord. And if one has pleased the Lord, then he may give us love of God. Because love of God is the goal of life, prema puvarta mahan. And that goal of life can only be attained when the Lord is pleased and desires to give it to us. But not only sannyas, you can also stay at home with a wife and all your 12 children and just happily take care of them and serve the Supreme Lord with all of them together and also please the Lord. And he may give the love of God to the householder instead of to the sannyasi.
I'm supposed to get on a stick. On me first.
It may just go past the nose of the Swami straight into the lap of a householder. However, still, the sannyasis have a better chance. So any applications can be given in writing after this lecture. Any questions? Any comments?
One comment, Maharaj. Bhagavatam says that if you think of wife at the time of leaving, you get a female body next to
you. Yeah.
So, if he's staring at the...
If what?
If the person is staring at the wife at the end of life,
yeah,
he's sure to come back as a female body.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. And, Vedic culture is when you're in the female body, there is an added complication, and that is, you see, a man has a desire to have a woman. That is a complication. But a woman has an added complication, and that is that she wants children. Maybe not every woman, but most of them do. And children, oh dear, you know, what they don't need, right? It's like there's no limit to what you need when you have children. That's when you need the house, that's when you need the toys, that's when you need the baby blanket and the bottle, and that's when you need, you know. And before you know it, you're walking with a little thing, you know, in one of those strap-on carriers. Yeah? And nowadays, the man has to carry, and the lady sort of walks next to it. And it's like, I've tamed him nicely. and all these things, it's not easy. Yes?
Say, example, in a perfect world, no one reproduces or no one gets married.
Yeah.
Practice celibacy.
Yeah.
Sannyasi.
Yeah.
And what's how long the world go around? It's just gonna end.
Then then what will happen? Then all of humanity will just become extinct. Well, it might be good for the world. I mean, you might be saying, how will the world go around when humanity becomes extinct? Well, probably, you know, the world will do a lot better. Just like there is that area of Chernobyl, right? I mean, you know, where the nuclear reactor exploded in the Ukraine. Yeah. And it's a huge area, you know, that, I don't know. Chernobyl. Whatever way you want to pronounce it. Chernobyl, or Chernobyl, if you want to get really Russian, you know, whatever way you want to pronounce it, you know what I'm talking about. And, you know, it says that all human beings pulled out of that place, right? And, you know, they were expecting to see deers with three heads and all kinds of things. But the truth of the matter is that animal life in the whole area is flourishing. It's flourishing. Right? Nowhere in the world, you know, are animals having such a ball as in that area. No human beings. It's a constant party. So, you know, without the jokes, now I'll answer your question more seriously. If the whole human race would become extinct, then some animals would come up and would become humans in the next life, right? Some souls. So there's upward mobility from the souls. So there's always souls from the lower creatures that come up and that come into the human form. So there are new humans coming in. There are also some celestial beings from heavenly regions who've blown it and who are coming down and who also enter into the human forms. So there is a fresh supply of souls into the human form from two sides, from the bottom and from the top. Furthermore, right, your argument that what if everyone would become celibate is of course only theoretical. Let's be real. Yeah, let's be real. You know, it's not going to happen. If you know what I mean. I think we've really got other issues, other burning issues to deal with, you know, than celibacy is going to take over, right? I mean, you know, threat, you know, celibacy is taking over the world. I think it's not really on the top of the list, you know. Anybody else? Yeah. Very dry. It's a dry type of sannyas. There's no juice. See, the Advaita Vat, they are basically recognizing that the goal of life is eternity. But they are missing the point that eternity means an eternal relationship of service to the Supreme Lord. That part they don't acknowledge. They say that part doesn't exist. They say there's only eternity. Yes. So, for them, there is no higher taste. Whereas for the Vaishnava sannyasi, he serves the Lord and he gets so much taste in that. It is wonderful. Therefore, his whole sannyas is one ecstatic thing, and that ecstasy will ultimately develop into love. But thus, the Vaishnava sannyasi is full of love, whereas the Advaita sannyasi is just simply renouncing. Everything is wrong. If there is something good in this world, know it to be false. If there is anything nice, know it to be illusion. If you see any beauty, spit on it. If there is anything that is attractive, renounce it. Give it up. Realize it is false. It's not real. Practice austerity. Fast. Right? Give up sleep. Give up comfort. More renunciation. Because on the strength of your austerity will you stand. That is a Advaita. So it's all austerity. Lightning bolts are flashing from his eyes. Austerity is his aim in life. But his heart is as hard as a rock. And it's cold. It is cold. How can compassion and love develop in him? Not possible. Love needs to give, to serve. to serve. So, therefore, patam tena dhriti yusmadam grahaya. It cannot be maintained. He might temporarily rise above the bodily platform, but eventually he'll come back down into the bodily platform. That is the Advaita Vadi's end result. Return to the bodily platform. Louder, louder. Sanyat Maharaj death. Louder, you're not louder.
Those sannyasis who worship
demigods, they are materialists. So they are just men dressed up as sannyasis. They have not given up the material world. Because worshipping the demigods is forgetting benedictions for the material world. So how have they given up the material world? They are simply materialists. So their sannyas is a masquerade. They are Bollywood actors. That's all.
Maharaj, what is the position of Mayavadis?
What about Mayavadis?
Position of Mayavadis. Where do they stand? Mayavadis.
Mayavadis. Ay, ay, ay. In very short, the Mayavadi, Mayavad is found all over the world, in many cultures of the world. The idea of Mayavad is that on the spiritual plane there is no form, there is no variety, and on the spiritual plane all living beings merge into one spiritual all-pervading energy. And that is self-realization. This denies individuality, and this is, it denies that the Supreme Lord has a form, and it denies eternal service to the Supreme Lord. The Vaishnava position is diametrically opposed to this point of view. The Mayavadi will argue. He will say, isn't it that matter that one could logically say that whatever is spirit, another definition of spirit is that which is not matter. Agreed? One definition of spirit is that which is not matter. Agreed? Yes. Then logically the next step would be whatever quality is present in matter cannot be there in spirit. Then, since there is form and variety in matter, there can be no form and variety in spirit. This is the Mayavad reasoning. They place spirit opposite of matter. But the Vaishnava position is that actually everything is spirit. But matter is like a reflection of spirit in its pure form. It is the shadow of the full form of spirit. Therefore, whatever goes on in the material realm is a shadow reflection of the spiritual realm. So we are walking around here in bodies and individual forms, but the bodies that we have here are imperfect. Imperfect. Yeah. In the spiritual world, the bodies are perfect. No imperfections. That's the idea. In the spiritual world, everything, there is variety, there is landscape, but it's perfect. There are no swamps. Right? There are no garbage dumps. There is no garbage in the spiritual world. Nothing rots. Nothing is filthy. Everything is blissful. This world, you know, is sort of weighed in between the garbage. It's the way it is. There you go. Yes?
Maharaj, I think half my brain went to... I think you make the sannyas order very attractive. I want to know, are there any
Okay, Vedic culture is pointing out that the sannyasi was traditionally leaving home and living and entering into the forest and living a life of hardship. For ladies, that was not recommended because they are not built for that type of hardship. For ladies, what was recommended is to stay, to practice renunciation from either a home situation or go to a holy place and take shelter there and practice renunciation there. But the ladies are also recommended to practice a renounced life. So sannyas is not recommended for females, not only because of physical limitations, but also because of a particular mood, a different mentality. It said the ladies by nature are meant to be in family life, and they at every stage of their life they should remain in family life. When they are young, under the care of their father. When they are older, protected by a husband. Later in old age, protected by a son. So protected at all times. But within the family, she is acting as a spiritual head. Grandmothers in the Vedic culture were not just meant to spoil their grandchildren. That's nowadays, right? That's what grandmothers just spoil their grandkids. That's all they do nowadays. That's the sport. Chocolate. But my grandmother had a huge bag, a huge handbag, and it was full of unlimited chocolates and candies and all kinds of things. We even called her Granny with the bag. So she was good. So in Vedic culture, the grandmothers were also acting as a spiritual teacher in the family. They were also a spiritual head in the family. They would live very simple. They would be renounced, they would be engaged in worship, and they would bring in the spiritual influence in the whole family. So that's the idea. So a grandmother stays at home, but becomes the shelter for the whole family with advice and wisdom and so on. And sometimes we think that the problem with ISKCON is that there are not enough grandmothers. We need more grandmothers. And Gyan Samudra wants to apply.
And so to the mood, what is the destiny of the unmarried mothers? Unmarried women in ISKCON?
Unmarried mothers in ISKCON. Oh dear, dear. What's the destiny of unmarried of ladies that are dumped, or ladies that somehow or other by accident wound up in that position? What is the... Well, it's a handicap. But no handicap is so great that they can't go back to God. So if they nicely chant Hare Krishna and just follow four regulated principles, then they can go back to Godhead and take their little... bastard children, little children born out of what you call it? What's the English word? The opposite of wedlock, or yeah, okay, yeah. Anyway, those ones, they can also be delivered. Why not? Now, so everybody, basically, this movement, everybody gets a chance to go back home, even if you come from an ugly background. But to be a woman alone with kids is nothing but trouble. I was on a flight in Germany next to a very liberated woman who had kids and who never got married and chose to have kids and not a man. Yeah. And she was sitting next to me and we were talking and she said, you know, sometimes I'm thinking, wouldn't it be nice to have a husband and just stay home and look after the kids? She said, and it would be, you know. It's too much, having a job, having kids, running up and down to the, whatever you call it, where they dump the kids' parking place. I mean, it's intense. If you see these mothers with kids alone, it's amazing how hard they have to work. And smile at home and be a mother and be at home and be at work and do the job of the father is too much. Double work. Unfortunate position.
And the Brahmacharis that tend to want to just live a life of
Brahmacharis? Yeah, stay Brahmacharis. Brahma said to some ladies, he said, you can accept Krishna as your husband. You don't need to get married. He said to some. But it's not easy. And some, when they're young, they're very determined, they'll never want to get married, they never want to have kids, but later they may regret.
Thank you for your comment.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I have one block to you. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
So how Westerners do you comprehend that kind of?
Oh no, I mean it's
how
important.
How do you build that into Western culture?
I mean Prabhupada is explaining that his sister was 13 years old and still not married, and his mother, she freaked out and she told his father that if you don't find a husband for my daughter very soon, I will jump in the river. And she couldn't swim. So, you know, to make it more dramatic, you know. And so that was really strong in the culture. Well, of course, they got married, but they didn't live together. They just stayed home, but then they had the husband. They would do little service for the husband, you know, sometimes see the husband. And only when they were older would they start living together. Slowly, you know. So it was a gradual growing into the marriage. But then, you know, the girl was peaceful. Okay, I have a husband, and it's all done. And, you know, boy also. Okay, I have one. So it's all going on. How to bring that into modern culture? Yeah, that's very difficult. I was reading some interesting statistics lately, and one of them said that in 1960, the average age of marriage for girls was 20 years old and for boys 23. That now, the average age for girls is 26 and for boys 28. So it's moving forward, and it makes a difference if you think about it, because really it's better to have kids before you're 30. I mean, just health-wise, physically, and so on. And everybody knows biologically that's a better arrangement. So in the Vedic times, you know, they had like from 20 to 30, or like in 1960, they had from 20 to 30, and in Vedic times even younger. You know, sweet 17, all right, let's go. Or sometimes younger, have children. Well, it's better than young girls having abortions. Just have children. What's wrong with it? It's natural. It's good. And then young mothers have some energy to play around with the kids instead of these old mothers from over 30, you know, huffing and puffing. Yeah. But how to introduce it into Western culture? Well, the first thing is the West has no culture. So that's the problem. So first we have to introduce some culture into the West, and then after that, gradually, you know, we can introduce these kind of principles also. But first you have to begin with some culture. Yeah. And there are maybe some other things that we have to teach people first, you know, before we can have all this. And in ISKCON it was tried, you know. I mean, so they tried it, and it really didn't work very well. Wherever they had tried these kind of things, in New Vrindavan they tried a few of such marriages, and it was just a disaster. Because we're not ready for it. So it may take a few generations before we get there. Thumbs up, thank you very much, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.
So this is Prabhupada Maharaj Ki Jai.